It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet busters and closet dwellers. It is time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. And today we're going man to man, dad to dad, and we're going to look at our gay lives post the American presidential election. Now, for most of us, it's no secret that we just went through quite the election. Got a lot of us, well, I would say a lot of us, at least in my world, my circles, my friends, scratching our heads saying, what the fuck just happened? And for others, it sent a cry of jubilation across the country because they felt like finally their voices have gotten heard. But regardless of which camp you may stand in, at least for now, one thing we know for sure is Donald Trump is our president-elect. And what we also seem to know, at least if you're some of us that fall in the what we would call, quote, marginalized individuals, such as Latinos, African-Americans, Muslims, Asians, women, and the LGBTQ community, there's a lot of confusion and uncertainty and fear that we're kind of feeling prevalent in our hearts, our minds, and our souls. So rather than hibernating and hiding and becoming victimized, which I know could be where a lot of us want to go, I know I've been there myself over the last few days since all this unraveled, I felt like it was time to do some real soul searching and banding together to see how can I make this planet a better place for everyone concerned. And the way I felt I could do that was to bring one of my friends to be a guest on the show today. He's been on the show before. His name is Jay Forte, and he's a gay dad, he's a gay parent, he's a gay man, and he's also a professional coach just like me. And I thought if we put our heads together and we opened the dialogue and we did some things and talked about what happened on that day that we all woke up and saw that on November 9th, our world has become something completely different. Maybe just some open dialogue would be really good to see how we might be able to bring some new lightness to the world in a place right now that for a lot of us seems pretty dark. So welcome to the podcast once again, my buddy Jay. Thanks for being here, bud.
Hey, Rick. I'm glad to be with you, and I'm glad we're talking about this because it's time to talk about it and move forward instead of getting stuck spinning lower and lower into some place that doesn't really serve us.
Yeah, and I think for most of us, I mean, you and I had some brief conversations before we decided to do this podcast about we were both spinning. We were supposed to be spinning down into some dark places. And, you know, I think I'll just kind of throw in where my head was and then, you know, have you kind of put it in. But I remember waking up the next morning and my husband and I had actually gone to sleep that night. We had turned off the TV probably around 10:30 Pacific time, kind of knowing where we thought things were heading, but we weren't 100% sure. And we just said, you know what, we're just going to see what we wake up to. And of course, I didn't sleep really well that night. And then finally, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm laying there and I'm like, don't look at your phone, don't look at your iPad, don't look at anything. And finally, by 6 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, screw it, I have to know. And that's when I saw it. And the first feeling I had was, I wouldn't say what the fuck just happened. It was more, what does this mean for my country? What does this mean for me? What does it mean for my kids? And the bigger picture. And then I immediately got angry. And I realized how much that anger started stirring up inside me. And then pretty much the rest of that day, I couldn't get anything done. And didn't like where it put me, but I realized that was part of the journey I had to start going through. So I'm curious, Jay, you know, why don't you share some of your headspace you were in also?
Yeah, I was traveling, Rick. I was speaking to two different groups of people. I'd just spoken to a group that day. And so I was really a confident Hillary supporter, imagining that the candidate of Donald Trump and the person that he was would be so not who we are that people would just see that that's just not possible for us, that this does not make any sense for who we are and who we say we want to be. So I went to bed early knowing that I had a big group to speak to the next morning, and my one of my kids sent me a note and said, it's an absolute tragedy, you have to watch. I'm like, well, but the tragedy I don't want to watch. Mm-hmm. And then I was up all night watching the results get stranger and stranger from my perspective. And it wasn't about Republican or Democrat. It was about who these candidates would represent us to the rest of the world. And that was where I was just epically disappointed.
Yeah.
And that was the place I didn't have. And we're speakers too, so we never have a shortage of words.
Right.
I was really, really out of words on this. And then I'm stuck in my hotel room. I can't even call people. I can't even deal with it. I have to wait till the next moment. I mean, till the next morning. And when I find that I have 18 CEOs to speak to the next morning, 17 of the 18 are Trump supporters. And I have to go on in front of that with a 3-hour program and try and maintain some kind of decorum, realizing that this conversation that I'm having with them is not about elections. It's not. It's about something else entirely. So I can't be perceived as the Hillary supporter in the middle of Trump country. And so it was this. It's not, like you said, it's not about winning and losing.
Right.
And we've had a whole lot of conversation on Facebook about that.
Yep.
It's trying to help people understand why we would be so disappointed from the results because of what our country thought was a fair representation of who we should be out to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the marginalized or the less represented groups were ones that I saw some really big progress under the Obama time period of coming out of the closet, feeling this ability to feel normal in today's world, when a lot of us grew up never feeling normal.
Mm-hmm.
And here was a new administration that was coming in that was going to undermine all of that progress, that vocally said, whatever you have done, we are going to try and undo.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant, and already that was one more of those things that said to me, who are we that we now don't value each other the way that I thought we were valuing each other?
Yeah.
And I know there's a whole lot, there's so many more big things at stake at this. I know that.
Right.
But down deep, what I was hoping for and imagining that in this place of awareness, that our economy, that our world was becoming more aware, the end of the Mayan calendar that said the world was going to end. No, that was the end of the period of lack of awareness and joining the period of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this epic setback.
Yeah.
About awareness. And like you, I mean, it the first moments were, I'm not a person, I'll share with you, Rick, I am not a person, I rarely get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And the rage that has been going on in my head for this past week or so is something that scares me, that I could possibly be in that space and possibly look at others from that space.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have to blow the whistle and say, look, this is nothing more than a situation. We have survived other things. Wherever it goes, we have the capacity to be here. We have other people watching. You are not alone.
Right.
Why are you presuming that this is truly the end of the world when it's not?
Right. Well, I keep looking at this from the perspective of, until we know what is, we don't know anything. So, even as
Yep.
we're starting to see cabinet appointments and prime, people in his, administration starting to be talked about or appointed, it's one of those things where, wait, if I allow myself to get caught up in this, as I have, it's been like that roller coaster, and suddenly the Bible of Facebook seems to be where everybody's getting their, information, so to speak. I've found myself starting to go, wait, I need to stop and I need to get very clear with myself, and I need to look in the mirror at why this is affecting me so much. Yes, the obvious is, as a gay man, as a gay parent, as a father of young adult women, that pretty much sums up my, dogs that's there in the fight for this. But when I step away from those things and go, okay, if I wasn't a gay man, if I wasn't a father of two young women, how would I be feeling? The feelings would be the same. This is not what we do to each other as humans. This is not how we treat each other. Even though I may be angry at my fellow humans who, made this occur, I want to look in the mirror and go, okay, what is this supposed to be teaching me about how I want to be with other people? And it is a lot of soul searching right now, even though I'm in and I still have moments. I mean, a little bit ago before we recorded this, I was in a moment and I'm like, okay, stop, quit looking at this stuff and let it go and move on. So I think we're kind of being called to that consciousness piece. At least I know that's what I'm feeling for myself is, okay, what consciously and mindfully am I supposed to be looking at right now myself?
Yeah, I think there's a great line that I'm thinking of now, trying to put myself back on track, and that, you know, never give up on a challenge until you see its blessing. And I don't know it, and I'm not yet quite aware of how this may play out and be a blessing, but I know I have to be looking for it. And I know that if I'm aware and looking for it, that means I'm not looking for what's wrong, I'm actually looking for what's right. Mm-hmm. And if I could have that mindset, then no matter what goes on, then I think that is a more productive way to be in each of the moments that we still have. Mm-hmm. I see and I remember from our coach training that, you know, anger is not a bad thing. Staying in anger is an unproductive thing.
Right.
But sometimes the anger then says, what do you want to do about this? And maybe the world that you thought was going on wasn't the world that was actually going on. And it must not have been for so much of the country to band with that perspective and to feel unrepresented. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why they voted that way is they felt unrepresented.
Yeah.
So, you know, what needs to happen now? And sometimes we have to get thrown against the wall before we realize that we have a problem, because until then we're kind of mindlessly going along, mm-hmm. thinking that things are one way when in fact much of the world, much of our world is really very different. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing about that, Rick, and it's my call to everything that I'm doing now, is to remind people that just because the world can give them a 2-second answer doesn't mean that that answer matters. You know, we're in the Siri world, you know, we're in the Google world. I can source anything in a minute, and whatever it tells me, I think it's true, and I take it and I run with it.
Right.
And I find millennials in particular, but most people, are so quick to take something and not dig deep into what things really mean. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing we all got caught with is listening to these horrible sound bites and thinking them to be true.
Yep.
And if we're ever to have really successful relationships, they're not going to be frosting relationships. They're going to be cake and frosting relationships. Mm-hmm. So we have given up on the cake, and everybody is just about the frosting now.
Right.
Our ability to understand anything, you know, is really minimal. I work a lot in the workplace, and the biggest thing that employers say to me, as looking at this next generation come into the workplace, we're looking at millennials, college grads moving into the workplace, and their epic disappointment is around one big thing. They are not critical thinkers. Mm. They have not learned to dig deep anywhere, because they click to their phone, the phone gives an answer, and off they run.
Right.
And the ability to truly understand an issue, and if we had been wise in this election to not let people get by with the sound bites, but hold both candidates,
yes.
And I know neither one was perfect, and expecting that either one would be perfect is also unrealistic.
Right.
It's not that we expect perfection. It's that who does a better job of understanding what's true in the country and could represent all of us. Mm-hmm. And to me, that means understanding what are the real issues and does everybody have a voice. I don't want any candidate to think the only voices they should listen to the LGBT. I absolutely not. So who didn't get heard just spoke. You know, and the ones that did get heard, I think, kind of coasted along saying, hey, we're heard now, so we don't have to work that hard. When, in fact, every day you must fight to have your voice heard about something that you think is important.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, too, and I'm not going to probably do this exactly right, but given that we both have been through the same coaching experience, you know, the founder of our coaching school, Bruce Snyder, posted something right after the election about somewhat this being kind of the slingshot effect. And I know I'm going to try to get it right. When I'm coaching someone, if you use the slingshot effect, it's kind of like you catapult them forward to that thing that they may be trying to do, or you catapult them over that challenge they're trying to get to, or you catapult them into a new way of being and get them to that space. And then oftentimes you get them to that space and they feel that emotion. They feel that, you know, they've arrived in that arena where they're trying to get to. And then you work backwards to, okay, what is this? What is that you're trying to get to? We put you in that reality, but what did you miss between where you were and all this? And then you kind of fill in the gaps before. And he kind of used that analogy of the election. We've basically been catapulted to a space that half the country, or half, let's say half the voters, because that's really what it is, half the voters didn't know really existed. And so now how do we work backwards through this and open up to a new way of being in the world together? And it is really kind of that slingshot effect. We've just been catapulted forward to a new reality. So now how do we begin to work with each other and to understand each other? I know for me, I have not been reacting as much to some things I've been seeing, and I've been asking some questions, and I honestly wish I hadn't unfriended some people along the way, because now I'd really like to have some conversations. And I may, as things settle out, I may reach back out to some of those people and say, I'm sorry I unfriended you because I was caught up in a moment, but I want to understand. And I don't know, it's just something I'm feeling. We'll see where my heart and head goes, but I know my heart sometimes is pretty open to, like, let's mend some fences. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's the lesson in here. And the thing that I was watching for most, and I was most disappointed when the first round of winners and losers came out, was that when the losers were upset about losing, I saw very few of the winners empathetic enough to say, I get where you are. This mm-hmm. must feel terrible. Most of them were like, get over it. And yes. So if we're to ever unite, it is by being really aware of both sides. Mm-hmm. How do we allow a winner to win? And how do we allow a loser to feel valued and supported even though they've lost? Mm-hmm. And that was still more of the disappointment that I think that I saw, that the world has become a Donald Trump kind of world where there are winners and they matter and everybody else doesn't.
Right.
And if that's the mindset that we're going to go through, now it's more important for the losers meaning those who didn't see the election as a success, to find their voice, to step boldly forward, but in a confident and supportive and empathetic way, or compassionate way. That's more than empathy. I think it's more compassion.
Yeah.
That how do we let them know that we're still here, we're strong, and we're going to be heard because we're valuable? And we can do that in a professional way. I know it'll be a little while before the protests stop, and I hear a lot of people saying, you know, what a total waste of time to protest. Well, when you feel passionate about something or passionately about something, and that is an avenue open to you, then good for you for using it. It's a way of you dealing with it and a way of you finding who's your community, who's your tribe.
Right.
Of people who believe what you believe at a time when you wonder if anybody believes what you believe. Mm-hmm. And so I think these are healthy things. What I'm hoping happens is that this administration is wise enough to see that it is still their responsibility to represent all of the people. As much as people may not have felt that Obama did that, I have seen very few, presently from my view, of somebody who had the intention of representing everybody.
Right.
And though it may have seemed that the less represented got more represented in his regime or his administration, I think it was because they had never been represented in other times.
Right.
And so this, I thought, brought everybody up to a more equal footing.
Right.
I'm hoping that, in fact, part of our conversation before, Rick, was how do we help those who feel like this new administration is going to start saying things to remind you that you're less than who you are.
Yes.
That you're less than okay, that you're less than great, that you're less than awesome. Mm-hmm. And my message, your message, is, hey, there is absolutely nothing wrong with you. Don't listen to any church. Don't listen to any politician. There's nothing you need to change. You came out the way you're supposed to come out, and you are perfect as you are.
Yes.
Now, how do you self-realize that in a world that may look at parts of you as less than perfect? And the way they get you is if you start to believe that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do is to get out to everybody, particularly millennials, to mobilize millennials to mm-hmm. say, look, watch this generation, watch this administration, and don't let them do things that are contrary to the way that we must think as a country in order to be a truly United States instead of a, a governing part and the victim of everybody else.
Yeah.
And I think there's room for us to learn and to encourage this next generation who have dawdled on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And now have been thrust into, so here's your slingshot thing, right? They've been thrust into this situation. It is now a lot of their responsibility to start taking political action, to start standing forward about what it is that they believe, and to share their perspectives. I have never seen a generation more aware of their sexual fluidity.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that we may start to hear some very heavy Republican and conservative Christian pushback about what's right and what's wrong instead of be who you are?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the magnitude of voice and the sound of the voice and the clarity and the legitimateness of the legitimacy of this is who I am. I am not going to listen to anybody tell me I'm not okay. Then advances this whole idea about being authentic in who you are, in that that's what our country's forefathers thought this was. When they said life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, they didn't say the pursuit of biggest house and most wealth. They said the pursuit of the ability to self-realize.
Yes.
That there isn't a right way of being you. There's a you, and it's your responsibility to develop that and live that in the greatest way possible. And it is our government's responsibility to give you the opportunity to do that, not to tell you how it's supposed to look, but to create a clear road so you can go out and be it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that to me is the core of all this, because I got contacted from people outside of the U.S. borders like the next day, and people that I don't really even know. I mean, I've had some chat conversations with people in India and Pakistan who come to me as the coming out coach, but they can't really do any work with me because, you know, first of all, the monetary financial obligations are too great. But, you know, we keep dialogues open. And I remember one of the very first messages that I woke up to before I even looked at anything else, I saw there was a message on my phone from a guy from Pakistan saying, "I'm so sorry, Rick. I hope you know how disappointed I am for your country, and I hope your country doesn't become what my country has become in regards to any marginalized human beings." And that was so warming to my heart that this guy that I don't really know would reach out and say that. And it also gave me the fire under my butt to go, okay, so how do I now want to go show up? Which leads to the conversations you and I have been having about, you know, the millennials. And I know anybody listening to that has been hearing us bring that up. And I don't want anybody to think we're putting the blame on the millennials. What I'm think Jay and I are really saying is you have the most powerful ability right now of any generation to say this is not acceptable. Now, I realize within the millennial generation, there are those who voted for this administration. But I think the fine line is to realize that everybody has the right to be exactly who they are. They have that God-given, born into it right to be who you are. And the caveat I put on that is you have the right to be who you are, provided it does not infringe on someone else's human rights to be who they are. And
yep.
All of this doesn't need to get argued about. You can have your religious beliefs. You can have your beliefs about whatever, but you don't, you know, one of the things, and I think I may have talked about this guy that I speak with a couple of times, but I'm going to bring him up on this podcast right now. He's 72 years old. He speaks with me on PFLAG panels all the time. He's as straight as they come. He's just a good old boy, white guy who was raised in the Bible Belt in the South. And he speaks on PFLAG panels because he believes everyone has a right to be who they are. And that's the only reason he shows up. He doesn't feel like anyone else has the right to tell anybody else how they should live their life. He does not have a gay son. He does not have a lesbian daughter. He does not have anybody in his family that he knows is transgender or bisexual. None of this affects him. But what he knows is this just isn't right. And when you can see someone from that generation taking the stand, this is why I think Jay and I are both just talking about the millennial generation. You guys have the fire under your ass already. You've already determined there's ways you don't want to show up in the world. This is just another way that you get to go exercise that right. As long as you give that right to everyone else around you as well. And I think this is where the consciousness and mindfulness of the world can be raised, when we understand, hey, we may not agree with each other, but you know what? That's your right. You get to go do this. Again, provided that it doesn't infringe on somebody else's human rights or harm them in some physical, emotional manner. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, Rick, there's the concept that I'm trying to introduce to my world, the Rhodium Rule. And the Rhodium Rule is, I was trying to update the Golden Rule and the Platinum Rule for what's changed in our times. And so rhodium is, as I Googled, so I have to make sure that my information is accurate, rhodium's more precious than platinum. It's, in fact, the most precious metal out there. And I thought a rhodium rule, a rule to live by, is these three little parts. Know yourself, be yourself, let everybody else be themselves. That if you were aware enough of who you were, you would see that you come packaged with more good things than not good things. Mm-hmm. And that's your built-in competitive advantage, for you to show up and deliver to the world something amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's, so if you could know it, that creates the opportunity, if you could be in your world, to go and be it. Now, here's where we bump into our government sometimes. Where are the places that stop you from being it? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's that, you know, I won't buy from gay people, or I can fire you because you're gay, or we don't deal with transgender people here. But the ability for you to be the biggest version of you is all of you, not the pieces, necessarily the pieces that the world around you says these are okay and these are not okay. So the know yourself is know yourself in all aspects, and be yourself completely, mm-hmm. whatever that is. And when you see, this is my perspective, but when you see the amount of work it takes to do that, you certainly would be far more compassionate and encouraging other people to go ahead and discover their truth and discover mm-hmm. their identity and be authentic in their own way.
But this is where I stumble all the time. And I'm right there with you, man. I totally am in alignment with you. But if I'm allowed to be myself fully and show up in my biggest way possible, and let's go to what you just said, you know, that if my belief system says I can't serve someone because of their religious faith or their, you know, sexual orientation, this is where I kind of get dicey in my own head. How does that then affect them being able to be their biggest version of themselves? And whether government's involved or not, I'm trying to reconcile that in my own head, because I want people to be able to be who they are, but the only way I can come back to it is, but you're infringing on my human rights by saying I can't do this.
Yeah, the way that I reconcile that is, there is nothing I should hold myself to a standard that I look at everybody else as valuable and exceptional as they are. And that, in that case, there's not one belief I can think of that would stop me from honoring, supporting, serving, applauding someone else.
Yeah.
So if your belief system tells you that there are some people worth it and some people who are not, then to me that says challenge your belief system.
Yes.
Because the bigger belief system is that person is equally worth it in everything that goes on in their life as yours. Mm-hmm. And with the caveat that you said, and this is from the ancients as well, that our job is to be the biggest, best version of ourselves that supports and grows and encourages people instead of taking anybody down. So you must look at what is best in you and how it serves other people. And anything that might be part of you that takes others down, that's the piece of thing or something that you have to work on. Mm-hmm. We each have that. There are things in our beliefs and in our way we grew up that don't make sense for the way we support others, that we could support others. And I think mm-hmm. that's what our lifetime challenge is.
Yeah.
But growing up as a Catholic kid, I know I see an awful lot of things that get told to me as true, but if they're that true, it means someone's better or somebody's right and somebody's wrong. And that's not what this is about. Mm-hmm. You know, my ability to self-realize was really curtailed growing up thinking that being gay was wrong, when I spent so many wasted years trying to be something I wasn't. And the moment I finally got free of it, I stepped boldly into who I was supposed to be, and I have done nothing but touch people positively since then. So I can't imagine that someone else's ancient belief tells me who I should be. that's my work to do. And it's my effort to put into this, to figure out how I'm supposed to show up here, but I hold myself to the standard that I must support and guide and coach and encourage and love others as part of my process of self-discovery.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I woke up to over the last week, which it's not something that I haven't thought through, but it came to me in a different way as I was trying to think of ways to start to open up and share things, was if I give you the gift of being you and you give me the gift of being me, where do we have a problem?
Yeah, I know.
And, yeah, it was so ironic that I had that thought, but it's like actually very simple. It's like if we give each other the gift of that thing, then where do we have a problem? We shouldn't. I mean, theoretically, we shouldn't. I know that thing, you know, we'll still have to kind of go through this in our own consciousness and our own way of being in the world. But I'm going to be, you know, really transparent here. I've had some pretty fucking ugly thoughts over the last week about some people in my life. And when I saw myself having those thoughts, I'm like, what am I doing? Why, you know, I can't be the best version of myself and have that thought. And I'd have to stop myself and like literally calm myself down about, I'm not talking ugly like I want to go kill him. Not that. Just angry about just common things like, okay, people who came and celebrated my wedding to my husband and then they blatantly went and voted for this administration. It gets under my skin, but if I allow that to be the thing that I focus on, I can't be my best version of myself, nor can I give them permission to be the best version of themselves. What I can do is go, let's have a conversation about this. Help me understand you. And it's hard because, you know, first of all, we're guys. And not that I'm making excuses, but we're guys and our masculine energy feeds on this stuff. So suddenly here we are, we're going to pound our frickin' chests and, you know, all this stuff. But when I allow myself to go stop, take the breath, and ask, who do I want to be in this moment? As hard as it may be, I know the person I do not want to be is this angry, raving lunatic that wants to say, do it my way or else. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think there's two things that come to mind, Rick, when you say that. One is namaste, right? I mean, if the translation of it is, may the divine in me acknowledge the divine in you, that means I have taken the time to see that there is something in there. And like you, can I expect that you do this back to me? Mm-hmm. And what if we each took the moment to see what was great and remarkable in people instead of what isn't? Mm-hmm. You know, in our fight, flight, or freeze brain, we have been, our system wants us to watch for danger, whether it's perceived or real, emotional or physical. We're always watching for it. So we're kind of looking at everybody with this eye that there's something wrong with them. Well, and then we can therefore find and muster any definition of it that we want, proving any Trump supporter now is somebody not worthy of our attention. Or we can, as you say, stop and notice for a minute that this is another human doing their best to work themselves into their best place in life. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, we don't share the perspective about this. What if we talked about it? Mm-hmm. And what if we banded together so that the perspectives that we had on why we didn't vote for this guy, now that he is in charge or his administration's in charge, so that we still get heard, but we get heard in a reasonable way.
Yeah.
That we get heard because there's something that really concerns us, and it's right that we talk about it because we're watching at it, or we're watching it from how it treats other people from a really important perspective. Mm-hmm. The little mindfulness model that I teach, Rick, and let me just throw these five quick words out to you, and it seems to work. It's been one of the things that has helped me not lose my mind in this whole thing. These five little words: stop, notice, consider, choose, act. If I could stop, meaning get out of reactionary brain and allow myself to think, I would be able to notice. I could then gather the information in this minute. And in this minute, I could see that person as a real person, not as a Trump supporter, but as a person. Mm-hmm. And in that, I now could consider, what else could I do here? I don't have to react. I don't have to throw things. I don't have to get mad. I could see I have 100 or 1,000 other potential responses in this moment. Mm-hmm. Then I choose, then I act. Mm-hmm. And if I could be that mindful, that intentional, I would shift out of reacting to all this stuff because I'm angry and pissed, I could say, you know what, let me just breathe for a minute, let me stop for a second, let me get out of the survival brain and let me go right into the bigger brain because I got packaged with one of those too. What do I want that brain to help me sort through now? Mm-hmm. And imagine how we would look to the Trump administration, anybody who didn't vote for him, if we were sane and articulate and banded together and cared about each other and said, this is why we want these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not fighting to say that church is right or wrong. We're fighting to say we're right to be who we are, regardless of anything that you might be reading, because when you trust yourself and you listen to yourself, that's where your answers are. Mm-hmm. It's not in somebody else's book. It's not in some constitution. It's down deep.
Yeah.
You know, what is true for you to self-realize? And our ability to be sane and logical and practical means we don't ruin this moment mm-hmm. by being a nut, because all we do is burn ourselves out. And then we also, I think, make our next moment better because we come across as sane and realistic and practical, and that's how you get things done.
Exactly.
And I think this is a big call for all generations to say, if this is not what you wanted, then how do you wisely, sanely, and intentionally work together to make it happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the moment that we're at.
Yeah, I agree. I remember, you know, at least in my coach training, one of the most pivotal moments for me was when one of my trainers said, when you can look at a situation, especially a interpersonal situation with another person, and you look at it from the perspective that each of us is doing the very best with what we've been given to do in the moment, that's all we can do. And I thought, this is pretty amazing. And then she used the analogy, which kind of brought up a lot of discussion in the room as we were going through the training, but she goes, even someone who just murdered someone is doing the very best with what they've been given to do. That may be the best they can do in that moment. And as I really took that in, and then I had to remind myself of that several times over the last week, that every person who cast a vote was doing the very best in the moment that they could with what they've been given and the knowledge they have. So now let's go forward and see what we can all do best in these moments moving forward to be our best versions of ourselves and allow others to be the best versions of themselves. And not to sound crass about this, but the president is very powerful, but he actually is just the figurehead. The Congress is just figureheads. They're just people representing humanity. So what if that's how we looked at this as humanity? We're going to band together so that those that are at these upper regions of running our country really have to represent us more now than ever. And I'm not discounting everything that's come, because, you know, I'm sitting here looking at, you know, a quote by Abraham Lincoln that says, whatever you are, be a good one. And I think that really ties into what we've been talking about today. But if we really banded together as humanity now and said, okay, let's be our best versions of ourselves and let each other do that, I think we would have a much more different dialogue than what's been transpiring over the last few days.
I think you're right. Eckhart Tolle says, you know, people respond from their level of awareness. Mm-hmm. And so we now have a new awareness. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a very different situation than many people thought, but all it is a new awareness. It's just information. A great definition of awareness is showing up on purpose in the present moment without judgment. Mm-hmm. Could we be wise enough and spiritual enough to look at this without judgment, because the judgment clouds your mind.
Yes.
The options that then come from it are going to be far less than the options that came from somebody who just notices, just meaning gathers the information that this is what's going on, so we could ask the question, what would make this better?
Absolutely.
Well, what would make it better would be a lot of us that now decided that it's time to mobilize and to be collective in our perspectives, to be vocal, to be loud in our perspectives, but to be kind and generous and loving and caring, because these are still our people. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to always agree. In fact, we won't. Right. How could we possibly? I mean, the nature of what we're trying to do as a United States, it's not like Finland or Sweden or Denmark, where the complexion of the country and the religion and the things that they do are really homogeneous. Mm-hmm. Everything about us is different. You know, our entire model is that we take the diverse in together and then we find some way to manage it. And what we need most is collaboration, knowing that we come at it with very different perspectives and always will.
Yeah.
And if we could be open to valuing and validating and acknowledging that everybody else has an equal and important voice and perspective, could we honor it and hear it? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that any of that makes us soft. I think that makes us wise.
Yeah.
That here's how to look at this world that is always fighting with itself because it's missing the most important message. You got to look at everybody and say, you matter as you, and you matter as you. Not you as matter because you're part of my club, and you're not part of this club, so you don't matter. The moment I think we could call that out for when we do it and challenge our own beliefs, because we all do it, mm-hmm. That we would then be on the spiritual path. Spiritualists mean the growth into our greatest self, that we could truly influence the way things go here instead of just be pissed when it doesn't go our way.
Yeah. And I think I want to talk about something that Jay has available for everybody that we're going to make available on the show page here is a poem that you wrote that ties into everything we've been talking about today. Before we wrap up here, Jay, let's just kind of give everybody a preview. You know, we talk about what's the name of the poem and why we want to share this.
Yeah, so one of my hobbies is I love Dr. Seuss rhyming poetry because I'm a linguist by training too, and so I love wordplay, and I also love these epic poems that have a big message. Mm-hmm. So I wrote one titled You're Great and You're Awesome Just As You Are, mm-hmm. to remind us that there's more right with you than wrong with you, no matter what you think is wrong with you.
Right.
And don't let anybody ever tell you that you're not okay as you are. So it's a story about a town where in order to live in the town, you have to have brown hair. And it's totally ridiculous on purpose, mm-hmm. because most of the reason why we have biases because they're really ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And one of the kids finds out that he's actually not born with brown hair, he's born with blonde, and all of the trauma that happens to him until he realizes that blonde is what's right for him. Mm-hmm. And he treats this or shares with this village that he lives in a lesson that says it's not in the color of your hair that matters. It's you on the inside. It's down deep. Yeah. Down deep is your gold. And so I had such fun writing it. It was a little long for us to read it today.
Yeah.
But it's free. You know, it's a free download, and you can get it at thegreatnesszone.com. Right on the main site, there's a blue box that has the name of the poem, You're Great and You're Awesome Just As You Are. I would love it if you would read it for you, but then read it with your kids, mm-hmm. so that they start to hear that whatever and whomever they are, that it's you're great and you're awesome just as you are. There's no fixing needed.
Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful, and I love it. So, and I think that's a really good place for us to wrap up, is to leave that kind of hanging there. You're great and you're awesome just as you are, and it doesn't mean that because there's a new administration and a new president that there's any reason that we shouldn't be seeing ourselves exactly as the great and awesome people that we are. So thanks, Jay, so much for being with me once again. I'm so glad we got to have this conversation. I hope somebody walks away from this with a little more inspired way of being in life and going, okay, I'm going to go make a difference in life. But I appreciate you being here with us today, Jay.
My pleasure always, Rick. I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Absolutely. And we're going to wrap it up for this episode, and I appreciate everybody listening, and we'll be right back with you in just a few more days, everyone. So get out there and step out, step up, and step into living your great, awesome, powerful truth. Take care, everyone.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.